So, although this is technical, I promise, promise, promise this will get very practical and very direct. We will be resting in our direct experience, but just want to give us a frame for our practice today. So, there's this thing called name, nama in the Pali. In the Pali, ancient language that the teachings of the Buddha and his disciples, the teachings of the Buddha and his disciples, the language that it was preserved in, recorded in. So this term, nama, NAMA, is just pointing to different activities of the mind. I was asking one of my teachers about this. I was like, how would you describe nama? And English isn't his first language, so together we were just trying to figure out, how would you describe nama? I said, what activities of the mind? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. So these five activities of the mind that help us make sense of what's happening in any given moment. So there's feeling tone and perception and volitional formations and contact and attention. And they are the means by which we come to have experiences of feeling tone, feeling into experience. What Utejaniya talks about is feeling into an experience. So, this movement of is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neither pleasant or unpleasant? Perception. Just recognizing, naming experience, the matching of an experience with our memory of a past experience that helps us to recognize it, to name it. Volitional formations, intentions, thoughts, emotions that can give birth to mental proliferation, contact. It happens so quickly and it happens with such rapidity, right? Contact, a working sense gate, like the eye, a sight, and then consciousness. And the three of those things, when just meeting, that's considered contact. And then we have attention. So they are the means through which we come to have an experience. And all of it starts with attention. Our attention lands on some part of our experience. Say, a song comes on the radio and it's one of our favorite songs, or it's the face of a loved one, or the smell of coffee. And then based on that object, smell of coffee, our favorite song, face of a loved one, some experience. These activities move in to actually understand and make sense of the experience. Say we hear the voice of someone on the other end of the line. So out of these myriad experiences, which is just life kind of pouring through the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind, attention select something to be known by consciousness. So say your cell phone rings, and at that moment, there are a ton of things coming in through the eyes, the ears, the nose, tongue, the body. At that moment, maybe there's a slight pain in your knee. It's not very strong. It's not really calling the attention, but it's there. So you just had lunch. So there's the aftertaste of, say, lentil soup in your mouth. Maybe there's a bird out the window or moths actually on the window. Maybe the mood in your mind is a peaceful. So it's neither elated or you're not experiencing elation, you're not experiencing dejection. There's just this evenness in the mind. It feels quite peaceful. Let's say you washed your hair that morning And it's still a little damp and you can smell the shampoo. Or did I go through all six senses? Yes. Okay. And then the phone rings. So you answer it and you hear the sound of someone's voice. So out of all those things that are happening in any given in the moment, taste of lentil soup in the mouth, smell of shampoo, moth or bird outside the window that if you turned in that direction, you'd see a slight pain in the knee. Out of all those things, attention chooses the sound of someone's voice. And then there's contact, right? Again, so there's the ear, the sound, and consciousness coming together to help you have this experience of bare knowing of the sound of this person's voice. And then, as I said, feeling tone moves in. So we start to, is this the sound of this person's voice? Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neither pleasant or unpleasant? And I'm moving into like feel into the experience. And then there's perception, the recognition of like, oh, this is my Uncle Charles's voice. Oh, and these are my relatives in Liberia. I've just recently reunited with my father, who's from Liberia. It's been delightful. And he's there right now. He's been there for about over a month now. So we get on WhatsApp and all my relatives greet me from Liberia. It's super sweet. So sound of voice coming through WhatsApp or Zoom or the phone. And there's perception that recognizes, oh, this is my uncle. Oh, these are my relatives from Liberia. And then there are all the mental formations, right? All of the intentions, the emotions, the thoughts. If it's my Uncle Charles's voice, oh, I love him so much. If it's my relatives, it's just elation and happiness and a little, I don't quite know how to navigate this relationship because it's new and there are so many of you. There are some cultural differences. A lot of my relatives in Liberia are Muslim. So they're always blessing me. It's quite sweet. So this whole process, contact, feeling tone, perception, volitional formations, all initiated by attention. Okay. So where we rest our attention shapes the course of the mind. And in relationship to awakening, and you can think of awakening as our hearts, like just this big and beautiful capacity to be a safe space and a refuge for all of life through the liberation from greed, aversion, and delusion. So, in relationship to awakening, we can attend to our experiences wisely and unwisely. So wise attention, in the Pali, the phrase is yoniso manasikara. I know some of you like to have these things spelled. So yoniso, 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 manasikara, manasika. There's a little line over the A. You can think of it as a little hat. R-A. Yoniso Manisikara. Manisikara, that's what's being translated as attention. And it comes from two Pali words, Manisa Karoti. So Manisi, sorry, Manisi means a mind. And this particular phrase in the Pali canon is used in like a few different ways, but for now let's just call it mind. And then karoti, it means to make or do or to put. So with our attention, the act of attending is actually making or doing something with the mind. manasikara. And then we have yoniso. And this is what's being translated as wise. So yoniso manasikara, wise attention. It comes from the word yoni, meaning womb, origin, matrix. But just hang with that image for a moment. Just allow it to land in you. Womb for the attention. Matrix, origin of attention. The surrounding environment in which something develops, comes into its fullness. Wise attention. Two of the characteristics of wise attention, this womb-like attention, is that it's thorough. It penetrates. So attention is held in the womb of our direct experience, our moment-to-moment experience. So when there's enough contentment in the heart-mind-body system, and when there's enough stability within the heart-mind, and this is one of the reasons why today we're going to work with wise attention in relationship to the awakening factors. When there's enough contentment and stability within the heart-mind and the body, the faculty of attention is actually steady enough to penetrate our moment-to-moment experience, have a thorough experience of our moment-to-moment experience, and this leads to a liberating insight. And it's insight that liberates us from craving, from clinging. There are habitual ways in which we tend to relate to our moment-to-moment experience. So let's take the body. We tend to think that we can control and own the functioning of this body, that there's this self that can govern the body. And this is a misunderstanding of the reality of the body and the way that things work. Through attending to the body and ourselves and other aspects of our experience unwisely. So the Pali phrase for that, a yoniso manasikara. So just an A in front of yoniso, without wise attention or unwise attention in this case. But when we attend to the body with wise attention, we see that it's just a biological process. And feel free to turn to the body. Just turn your attention to the body. Aware of the different temperatures in the body. There might be coolness in the hands, coolness in the tip of your toes. You might feel warmth of the air passing through the mouth on the exhale. Maybe you feel the warmth of your jacket or your blanket around your legs or your arms or your knees. It's just this play of temperature that's shaped by various conditions. The temperature in the room, whether you have the heat on, the different layers that you have on. The body is a biological process of temperature. A feeling into the lightness and heaviness in the body. Might feel the heaviness as you connect with the contact that you're making with your chair or your cushion or the bed that you're laying on, couch that you're lying on. Might be a sense of lightness in your shoulders, your fingers. Turning the attention to the body and noticing movement, tingling, pulsing, vibration, stretching, expanding, collapsing of the ribs as you inhale and exhale. If you rest your attention in your lips, you may notice movement, tingling. There might be movement in the belly as it's digesting whatever you had for breakfast. And feeling into the areas of flow in the body, where there's connection and cohesion, or perhaps the different energies in the body are a little stagnant, so you're feeling some contraction in the shoulder. Or the contraction in the forehead. All of this is shaped by conditions that we may have some influence over. They're the condition of our will. We're a little cold, so we turn on the heat. We wrap ourselves up in our blanket. And most of the conditions that shape the body really beyond our control. And it's through this direct experience that attention matures and becomes wise, leading us into the insight of like, oh, there's no self in this body. There's no self that has the capacity to ultimately control this body. The body is just a play of conditions, and I'm just along for the ride of aging, or pleasant sensory experience, or injury, or weight gain, or weight loss, all the things that a body does in a lifetime. Yeah? It's a biological process of the body. And we discover that by turning the attention to just the bare experience of the body. And just by virtue of turning the experience, and experience the body as a body, the attention starts to become wise. So one of the reasons I'm wanting to spend the day practicing with the faculty of attention and cultivating wise attention is we rarely talk about it. We rarely talk about it, and we rarely overtly practice with wise attention. I think we practice with wise attention through implication, but not overtly. And to me, it is so fundamental to this path of awakening. Every aspect of this path, all of the practices, all of the teachings, all of the supports of the practice seem to me to be a means for arousing and developing wise attention. Now, this is just my opinion. It's nowhere in the suttas. But this whole path is a training in wise attention. In the commentaries, wise attention is said to be on the right track. They use the word patha, P-A-T-H-A. I tried to find this quote, but I couldn't find it. But my memory is that the reason it's called that wise attention is considered to be on the right track to be on the right path is because of where it leads. It leads to our welfare. It leads to freedom. It leads to benefit and that which is wholesome. So just through wise attention, we take the stuff of our lives, the ending of a relationship, a global pandemic, the dying process, sickness, the birth of a grandchild, our heart's longing for peace. And we use all of this. We attend to it wisely with a purpose to fully awaken, or whatever your aspirations may be for this practice. Maybe it's to live with more compassion or to live with wisdom. So we're training our attention to penetrate our moment-to-moment experience so that we can see the truth of what's actually happening. And this is so essential to awakening. So this is from the Anguttara Nikaya. This is the Buddha talking to the monastics, and he's talking to us. This is for us. He says, "I do not see even a single thing that so causes unarisen wholesome qualities to arise and arisen unwholesome qualities to decline as careful attention." So Bhikkhu Bodhi, monastic and scholar, translates wise attention as careful attention. Just feel into that for a moment. Careful attention. It's attention that has a curiosity in it. Perhaps a loyalty and a wish to actually know what's happening while it's happening. It's a tension that's shaped by our aspirations for this path in our lives. Careful attention. Attention that's filled with this skill, thoroughness, penetrating experience. As I've said, I've heard wise attention talked about as womb-like attention, nurturing attention. It's womb-like attention coming from yoni, a womb. It's as if in that phrase, we're being asked, what are the heart-mind states? What are the ways of being that we're nurturing with our attention? Are we nourishing the wholesome? Are we nourishing the unwholesome? Are we attending to experience in such a way that when we attend to the wholesome, the unwholesome start to decline? Bhikkhus, any dedicated practitioner, right? I do not see even a single thing that so causes unarisen wholesome qualities to arise and arisen unwholesome qualities to decline as careful attention. So this is the basic task of wise attention: to arouse and develop the wholesome and to diminish and abandon the unwholesome, whether it's the taints or the three unwholesome roots of greed, aversion, and delusion, hindrances. And can you actually feel the resonance between wise attention and wise effort? The wise effort, this application of energy that helps us to arouse what's wholesome and to maintain it, and then to diminish, prevent, and abandon the unwholesome. And to me, it feels like wise effort is one of the engines of our practice, and wise attention is the tool, the means through which wise attention is actually expressed, or wise effort is expressed. Just a word about wholesome and unwholesome. It comes from this Pali word kusala, Kusala, for those of you who benefit from seeing it spelled out, kusala. It's translated as wholesome, unwholesome. It's also translated as beautiful, skillful. I even heard someone, Oren Sofer, talk about it as shining, that which is shining. Isn't that beautiful? So, are we nourishing the heart mind through the faculty of attention that gives rise to beautiful, wholesome mind states, skillful, shining mind states? So wise attention. When I was thinking about how to practice with this, I was kind of like, how? Because wise attention has such a wide scope, such a wide scope that it's applied to, right? And there are four main areas that we attend to in this wise way, right? One is the conditionality of phenomena. Another area is the five aggregates. Another area, the unwholesome roots of greed, aversion, and delusion. You can include the three taints. Sometimes there are four. In the suttas, it's mostly just three taints. And then the hindrances and the awakening factors. So with the hindrance and the awakening factors, again, some basic kind of thrust of wise attention, an expression of wise effort. We're using the attention to diminish and abandon the hindrances. The language in the suttas is one of starving. And then wise attention we use to arouse the awakening factors and to bring them to their full maturity. You bring them to their full maturity based on seclusion, internal, external, dispassion, cessation. These awakening factors, when they're brought to their full maturity and they're in balance in the heart mind, they can help us make this breakthrough to awakening. This is from the Anguttara Nikaya. This is the Buddha. I do not see even a single thing that so causes unarisen factors of enlightenment to arise and unarisen factors of enlightenment to reach full. No, I typed that down wrong. So I do not see even a single thing that so causes unarisen factors of enlightenment to arise and arisen factors of enlightenment to reach fulfillment by development as careful attention. So again, here's wise attention, helping to arouse the awakening factors, and once they're present in our heart mind, to actually grow and increase, come into their full maturity, to do their beautiful work of helping us to release into freedom, all supported by wise attention. So I just want to make a connection to just reiterate my point, my personal belief that wise attention is fundamental to the path of awakening. I want to bring in a sutta, part of a sutta, in which the Buddha is describing the night of his awakening. And I like to imagine the Buddha with his monastics, people who have taken refuge in him, want to learn from him. And I'm essentially asking, like, how did you do this? Like, what happened that night? And this is what he says. And when you hear this, you'll hear that there's one recurring capacity at work that's integral to his awakening. And it's a wise attention. He says, then it occurred to me, when what exists, does aging and death come to be? So he's talking about seeing into, and this just isn't an intellectual seeing. This is like a heart in the bones, seeing and understanding that leads to a wisdom and insight that shifts like in him this fundamental orientation to life and experience, where he starts to relax the heart, this habit within the heart mind of craving and clinging and grasping. He's looking into this chain of dependent arising, which is just some fancy word for like phrase for like the ways that we human beings create suffering for ourselves, how we get caught up in this cycle of suffering that's born of ignorance. He's talking about a very subtle experience. And no one taught him about. He figured this out on his own. The Buddha is quite an extraordinary being. So he says, when what exists, does aging and death come to be? By what is aging and death conditioned? So here he's genuinely asking, inquiring with the heart, what is it that fuels this samsara, the cycle of birth and death? This actually he's using wise attention to see into the conditioned phenomena, dependent arising or dependent co-arising, recognizing that all of life is just animated by actions, thoughts, events, politics, weather, our health. All these causes and conditions coming together, influencing each other, and resulting in some fluid outcome, not static, in flux. And that this fluid outcome is just another condition that's going to play with and intermingle with other conditions that then give rise to some other fluid outcome. And on it goes. So he's really looking into this, he's asking like, okay, so what gives rise to aging and death? And this is what he says next. Then bhikkhus, through careful attention, so he's attending to his experience, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is birth, aging and death come to be. Aging and death has birth as its condition. And he goes on and on through each link of dependent arising. Wise attention was fundamental to his awakening. There took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. So it's not wise attention that actually liberates, it's the understanding that comes through wise attention, that liberates the heart, that liberated his heart. In all my years of practice, and let's be real, it's not a lot, especially compared to my teachers, compared to like Philip and Guy and Joseph. Not a lot. I've sat some retreats and we've been practicing. And we've all heard talks in the years of our practice and talks on a lot of the same topics over and over again. And in my years of practice, in my years of long retreat, I have heard one talk on wise attention. One. Why is that? this faculty of mind that is so crucial to our awakening deserves our attention, deserves our care. It is the support for our awakening. So we'll be practicing with wise attention today through the awakening factors. I really want to make something clear. Because you're like, oh, awakening factors. The emphasis won't be on the awakening factors or even trying to arouse them. Okay. We're using the awakening factors as a means for exploring wise attention. Because it's the activity of wise attention on a particular part of our experience that can give rise to the awakening factors. So for instance, with tranquility, when we turn our attention to peacefulness of the body and peacefulness of the mind, these are conditions that can help the awakening factor of tranquility to arise. So we'll be turning to the conditions that give rise to each of the awakening factors. But the intention isn't to actually, like, the intention for today isn't to actually arouse the awakening factors. It's to start to play with attention and helping it to start to transform into wise attention. Right? So the awakening factors may or may not arise. Totally okay. We're using the awakening factors as an arena to develop wise attention. So I know that was a lot, but it just felt necessary to give us a frame so that we could take this deep experiential dive into discovering how wise attention actually works in relationship to arousing wholesome mind states, like the awakening factors.